Welcome to Vermont Artists and Authors, where we interview great storytellers and artists from the amazing Green Mountain State. I'm your host, Barney Smith of StoryComic.com, and we're honored to have with us the nationally acclaimed and award-winning author of A Reason to Run, Mike Magluillo.
Barney, great to be here. Thanks for having me. Thanks for everything you do for Vermont authors.
We reached out, I think it was a couple months ago, when you kind of nailed down your launch date, which as of this recording was 2 days ago. Your book, A Reason to Run, has been launched, correct?
That's right. On 10-10, October 10th.
The premise of a book is about someone that experiences kind of a life tragedy and then is able to kind of overcome that?
Yeah, the book in a nutshell is a fictional coming-of-age story set in the 1980s about a teenage boy, his bike, a devastating accident, and the healing power of running. So it's a book about tragedy, recovery, and hope.
So talk to us about the inspiration, where the inspiration of this book came from.
The inspiration for writing really goes back to when I was a kid. In seventh grade, I read The Outsiders by S.C. Hinton and thought to myself, man, you know, one day I want to write a book. The idea of being able to capture life in words just kind of gave me a sense of control at a crazy, you know, point in anybody's life, that being middle school. And, you know, a whole lot of years passed, and I'm happy to answer any questions about those years in between, but a whole lot of years passed. And then along came the summer of 2020, and we're all locked down and summer activities are canceled. And I was on my front porch taking Zoom calls with clients and spent the summer watching my two young boys beating the tar out of each other on the front yard and thought to myself, you know, I'm going to write those guys a letter about growing up. And the letter snowballed ultimately into a novel when later that year I decided I wanted to, you know, really act on that dream I had as a middle school kid and write a book, and did not want to go back to traveling for work 3-4 days a week.
Right.
And that led to really the book becoming more fictional the more and more I wrote it. But I think the words became more on.
Right. So why have it take place in the 80s instead of making it, say, take place in a book in the 2020s?
Yeah, great question. You know, I graduated high school in 1989. The book's about a 17-year-old main character. And, you know, going into writing this, not having been a lifelong writer, I started writing about a setting and a time that was familiar to me. And so I knew I wasn't going to be comfortable writing a modern-day teenage story. So writing about the 80s kind of simplified things. You know, it was a different stage of technology and a world, a setting that I had firsthand experience as a teenager living through.
So was this important to write this book for you, or is this book important that you wrote for a younger generation?
Yeah, I started writing it for my boys. I figured when I started writing, they were 7 and 9 years old. And I figured I wanted to write something to them, a future version of them, like when they were teenagers. And as I got into it, as I think a lot of writers I've spoken to will agree, you know, there's a therapeutic element to writing a story, and any book you write, probably more so your first book than any other book you're going to write. There is a part of you and your life that goes into it, even if it is fictionalized. And it very much became a book. The story became a story I had to tell because it helped me revisit a lot of memories and emotions and thoughts in my life, but in a highly fictionalized storyline.
So was it fun to write about the 80s? I mean, there's that sense of nostalgia for you looking back on it, because you were in firmly in high school during the
80s. Yeah, no, it was fun. It was cathartic. It was nostalgic. The book also takes place in a fictionalized version of my hometown of LaGrange, Illinois. I call it Linden Grove in the book. And so there's a lot of places in the book, a lot of characters in the book that are, the places are inspired by real life places I grew up around. And a lot of the characters are mashups of people I knew at different points in my life, not necessarily when I was a teenager.
So what did you learn about yourself after writing this book?
Great question. I think what I learned is, one of the themes in the book is the idea of to stop chasing what the people around you value and to go find something to pursue that's all your own. And I wish I could say I figured that out when I was 17 years old, like my main character. It took me a lot longer, like it takes most people. But the act of writing the book, was a little bit of that, go pursue this dream you've had since you were a kid. And for various reasons, you kept putting off, until you were 50 years old, that being, writing a novel someday. And so that was, one of the biggest lessons I discovered about myself, is just that idea of, living according to something that gets you excited, not something you see exciting people around you.
And so is the audience for this, is it the audience for this then, the readership for people in that grew up in the 80s? Or is this, as you mentioned, you wrote it for your kids, but is this a book that's actually geared towards a young adult audience?
Yeah, I think it's a crossover. I think it's definitely going to resonate with adults, particularly, adults maybe 45 years and older who will have lived through or have close contact to the 80s. But then also, I think young readers, call it ninth grade and above, will relate to the subject matter. I think in particular, young athletes, that I hope is really an audience that takes something away from this book, because it, as the title suggests, it is a book about a teenage runner. And I do go into some detail and some depth about the experience of a distance runner. And I think anybody who has spent some time with endurance sports in general, running specifically, they'll recognize some of the emotions and the feelings, the sensations and the challenges of that kind of a sport.
Talk to us a little bit also on the character Sam, or Bags, as you these called as well. The protagonist, did you have an idea of a protagonist first, or did you have an idea of a message you wanted to portray first? How did the whole idea of the formation of the book come about?
Yeah, over the years, I had played around with different ideas of a main character. For a novel that I didn't necessarily know what the storyline was going to be. And I always had in mind, a teenage boy, kind of an underdog sort, smart and I should say, good grades, good at school, and ambitious, but a healthy dose of confusion about kind of where he fit in the world. And I had to have something happen to this kid to make his life change. And so the way I thought about that was to have a tragic accident occur in this kid's life. And, you know, the theme of the story comes out through his recovery from an accident. In that regard, I quickly figured out, you know, the profile of the main character and the tragic accident as the inciting incident, because I was able to draw upon a life experience when I was 12 years old, so in eighth grade, and had a 3-week stay in the hospital, including receiving my last rites for an accident that wasn't nearly as exciting as getting hit by a car on your bike. In my case, it was an appendix that exploded in my belly. Wow. I had a little bit of perspective of what happens to you, you know, when you undergo something like that physically, but more importantly, what happens to you socially and emotionally when you are thrown back into the world, having been, you know, gone from it for what seems like a lifetime when you're, in my case, 12 years old, in my character's case, 17 years old.
Right. Once readers read it, you don't own the book anymore, meaning you don't own. Have you been surprised by how people read and understand or interpret the book at all?
You know, based on early feedback I've received, I'd say I've been pleasantly surprised that people that don't come from kind of a running background really enjoyed the running scenes. You know, I've heard things like, you know, cinematic and engaging. And, you know, people were surprised that they would enjoy the running scenes as much as they did. So that surprised me, because I did think that the book would be a little bit more, the addressable reader base would be more tied to sports, but the feedback I've gotten is that's not the case. People sympathize with my main character. They identify points in their life, including their teen years, where they experience some of the similar insecurities and fears and doubts that my main character experienced. So that's been surprising to hear from a more of a general audience.
Did Bags go in a direction as you're writing it, in a direction that you yourself wouldn't have gone into, or is it pretty much his personality is very much like yours when you were his age?
No, I think he's different. I mean, he's truly fictional.
Right.
As a fictional story, I've exaggerated certain elements of his personality to make it engaging fiction. On the most obvious surface level, I didn't have nearly the talent for running that he discovers in physical therapy after his accident. So that is completely, you know, fictional storyline, but one that that, you know, suits his personality well.
How long did it take you to write the book? You said, was it a couple of years that you said?
Yeah, so I started in the summer of 2020, and it was fall of 2022 that I had it substantially complete. It was this time a year ago I started thinking about how I was going to go about and get it published. So it was a good 2.5 years of writing and revising. And then from January of this year, you know, it was more really polishing, copy editing and proofreading and really polishing it.
So, because you got it published through Rootstock. So how were you able to find Rootstock?
Well, I approached the whole publishing question. I guess, like, if you were going to hire a contractor to build a house, I researched a bunch of different, hybrid publishers. I chose that as the route I wanted to go, narrowed a universe of dozens to about 10, and was fortunate to have a few respond back with interest in working together, and, went through an interview process and spoke to all of them, and really just found Samantha at Rootstock to be the most thoughtful about my book, the most thoughtful about how she thought we should position it, and the added benefit was that Rootstock's here in Vermont, like us. And I thought that would be helpful in working with booksellers and book industry people in the local market here.
Right. Authors always talk about how important an editor is. Now, how different is the finished product as compared to the first draft that you submitted?
Well, first draft, you talking about the first draft I wrote?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, the first draft was probably draft 0.5. I sent it, my cousin is, has been a writer her whole life, and has an MFA and, writing as a profession. And so I remember texting her, after not telling anybody other than my wife and my boys, I was writing a book, and I said, hey, I've been noodling on this book idea. I've written a first draft. What do I do with it? And she had some great suggestions. The first suggestion was get some professional help. and so I did. One of her friends, who is a book coach, gave me a structural edit, substantive edit of the first draft. That woman was Candace Coakley, who's based outside of Boston, and who I thank in the back of the book. But she really helped turn, draft 0.5 in a good first and then second draft. Okay. And it was that draft that I ran with a few beta readers. And then probably the best stroke of luck or coincidence is I discovered the Burlington Writers Workshop when I had gone after the beta read phase, and they have a fiction book length workshop, which is a critique writing group. And they invited me in to a group of 12 that reviewed, segments of everybody's book. And over the course of a year, managed to get critique back from them. And that was hugely valuable in, turning the draft, what was probably a post beta reader draft, into something that I was comfortable sending out to publishers late last year.
So was there any parts of it in during that editing process where there was a spot in the book and the story, like, I love this part, but the editor's like, you got to cut this out, Mike. You had some parts that you loved that just.
Yeah. So if you go back to like the first draft, the draft I sent out to beta readers had a scene at the end. So this is high school kids. And one of the, scenes towards the end was a party after prom night, senior year. And I had drafted what someone termed a sensational high school party on a boat on a river with, a hot tub and people dancing and, booze flowing out of everywhere. And it was just over the top. I had so much fun writing it, and the main character and his buddies organizing the party and the drinks and so forth. And, you know, a couple of my beta readers were like, you know, I'm not sure where this scene fits, but it was a lot of fun to read. And so that saved me 10 pages to just cut that and rework the lead up to the climactic scene at the end.
What advice would you give people that are looking about trying to write their first novel, but they're saying, you know, Mike, I don't have the time. I have this great story. I've been working on it. I've been noodling on it. What advice would you give folks that are wanting to get their first book written?
Don't think about the book. Think about, you know, the next 200 words you can write and just bang away at it. You know, one chapter at a time, one page at a time. You know, if you think about how much, you know, you could do on a daily basis, if you could carve out an hour a day, you know, and you did that, you know, even 300 days a year, you can bang out a whole lot of words to get to that crummy first draft. And then you've got something real to work with.
And so how do you sit down and write? What was your writing style? Did you write in the mornings, afternoons?
What worked best for me, I wake up in the middle of the night with, and I can't fall back to sleep, and I've got a creative idea. That's when I'm most creative, is in the middle of the night. I will get up, spend an hour running with some creative idea that's finally come to me that fits into the novel, and I'll write it out longhand. And then so what I do the next day is I transpose that into typed form, you know, in Word, and make sense of it, because it half the time it doesn't make any sense, but the gist of the creativity is there. Then the left brain needs to kick in, and I need to actually get it on paper, so I can edit it, or get it on the screen so I can edit it. And then, you know, I edit it and polish it during the daytime at some point. But it's creativity in the middle of the night, the mechanical typing and editing during the day.
And so the process of getting the book form, you said you reached out there, you connected with Rootstock. How was it working actually getting the book physical? And that's it.
There's a structured process, and it starts with the cover. Mm-hmm. Rootstock did a nice job collaborating on that cover design and the font. We spent a lot of time thinking about that font. But it starts with the cover, and then it was a copy edit and sensitivity edit. We went straight to an advanced reader copy. Came out at the beginning of summer, and I spent basically the summer months pre-marketing the book, and Rootstock was helpful in getting it out to different sources of readers and reviews. There was a proofread based on that advanced reader copy, you know, finalized it in mid-September.
How much were you involved in actually, as you said, like the design, and you mentioned like the font and all that piece? Did that take a bit longer? And also you have the lines as well. Like every chapter heading has the lines that you see on the cover as well.
Yeah. Rootstock and their designer gets full credit for finding that font and coming up with the racing lines. Mm. And I'm really pleased with the chapter headings, which are a number with the racing lines, and then the first letter of every chapter, you probably can't see it, but the first letter of every chapter has kind of that collegiate or athletic track font of the first letter. So that was purely the creative work of Rootstock and their team. The broad design on the cover, we went through a couple of ideas, all kind of in an abstract sense. Neither I nor Rootstock was excited about, you know, putting a track or putting a runner out there that seemed a little bit overdone and, you know, kind of on the nose. Right. I actually came up with this design because blue and gold are the school colors of my main character. And there's a scene towards the end of the book where a running mentor of the main character tells my main character to look out, you know, at the horizon and says, you know, boy, if you could see beyond the horizon, what do you think you'd find out there? And so the blue and gold kind of create a horizon image here with the Chicago skyline in outline form, because the story does take place in the western suburbs of Chicago.
So then, Mike, I know the book just came out. I know it's only, like, as of this recording, 2 days old. So is there a sequel, like A Reason to Swim and A Reason to Climb? Are you going to have, like, a whole...
Yeah, I could go on forever. Yeah. Been noodling on a second book. I am pretty certain I've got the idea for that. And I'm working on that, but it's not a sequel or a prequel.
Okay.
But you could take this book in either direction, like most. I wanted to switch gears before I come back to Sam Baggs and his right. family.
You got the bug now, Mike. You got your first book published. Yeah. That's the hardest step of getting your first one. But after that, like the second and third and fourth books are going to come out easier.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I'm working on the second one. It doesn't feel nearly as productive because, when I started A Reason to Run, I didn't have another book that I was trying to proofread and pre-market and then market. Right. So maybe as the dust settles on this book, I'll be able to spend some more serious time working on a second.
You also are award-winning. You won it for a short story that you produced, and you won an award on that. So talk to us a little bit about some of your other short stories and stuff that you've done.
Yeah. So in between edits of the book, I discovered flash fiction writing as kind of a nice break from, you know, the heavy weight of working on a novel. And it was a great way to just kind of keep the writing muscles warm and actually sharpen those muscles, because you are focused on a much more manageable, shorter, succinct form of writing. And I've written about 6 or 7 flash fiction pieces over the past couple of years, and have had a lot of fun with it. I've explored a lot of stories. Clearly I've got something about, you know, characters trying to, you know, figure out youth and coming of age, because most of the stories all relate to kids and their relationships with their siblings and their parents. So that award that you're referencing on the screen there is a book called The Golden Boy. Right. And that is a story I entered in a contest with Flash Fiction Magazine this summer. And I entered that contest after that story getting rejected probably a dozen times over a year and a half. And me thinking this is my favorite story I've written. Someone's going to fall in love with it. I just need to keep fine tuning it. So I kept hacking away at it, and editors of Flash Fiction liked it.
That's right. So is this written by Mike, or is this written by Mad Gorilla then?
Well, Mad Gorilla Writes is just the name of my website.
Yeah, I know. It was one of your sons. Is like keep trying to pronounce the last name, right? Is that where?
Yeah. So if you try and pronounce my last name, you get frustrated really quickly. And I spent, my entire life, but in particular, my childhood, having every teacher, butcher that name. And my son Eddie, who's now 11 years old, came home from kindergarten one day and told us a story that he just gave up on his kindergarten teacher mispronouncing his name. And he said, you know what, just call me Mad Gorilla. So he was Eddie Mad Gorilla. And then Mad Gorilla has become like our family's inside joke.
Right.
You know, anything like if we go to a restaurant, you know, we put in our name, Mad Gorilla.
Right.
And so, yeah, I call my writing Mad Gorilla Writes. My website's madgorillawrites.com.
Perfect. So Mike, if people want to learn more about you, where's the best place they could go to?
Well, my website's got sort of everything I'm doing writing related. Madgorillawrites.com is the URL. But you can also find me on Instagram at madgorillawrites, Facebook at Mike Magliolo.
You can go to Rootstock Publishing and see your book is on there as well. So,
yeah, I would encourage people who are in Vermont to check out Vermont Bookshop in Middlebury. That's my local independent bookstore. Becky Dayton's the owner. She's been hugely helpful, helping me bring the book out to the local market and organizing a launch party that's taking place this weekend in Middlebury. But if you want to support my local indie, you can go to Vermont Bookshop. You can also get a signed copy from me through them. Otherwise, Rootstock or really anywhere you like to buy books, you can order my book.
Well, Mike, congratulations on the book and great talking to you and, you know, very inspirational book. And I look forward to having you come back on again when you got more coming out, too.
Well, that's great, Barney. Really appreciate your time and had a lot of fun talking to you.